Dr. Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about periodic table cleanup. I've done so many podcasts on the periodic table, surely I have nothing more to say. Well, I do, unfortunately. So last podcast I covered Dobby, the fairy's nose, these gnomes, ghosts of the periodic table. It was last time I thought, really, it's hard not to get anything. And so, of course, what I'm trying to do is learn how to teach, make something a bit entertaining, of course, stretch my mind. And so one of the things as I'm slowly learning the periodic table, and so I can actually, I suppose, I'm a bit hard on the lanthanides, that's the bottom thing at the bottom. I can start to know them. I'll have a bit of a talk about that in a while. But as you do, you say, I'm mucking that. It's something or other. And then you sort of go back and clean it up. Or you have a fact in your head and you say, hang on, that's not right. Or hang on. This is right with that type of definition, but if you expanded the definition ever so slightly, you'd pick things up which people tend to lost. And so this is as you're beginning to actually build the cross structures. There's the positional structures, the orbital structures, but then there was also thematic structures about how a series of four elements were discovered by chucking it in a Bunsen burner. What's that? There's other ones which are discovered. There's lethal elements and stuff like that. Heaps of things going through. But then you go across and you say, I've actually missed some things, like type in, tick, into Google, elements of place names. You know, says you would place. Says, hang on. Oh, yeah, strontium's in there, strontia, but, this is not there. So as you read the elements, and you're not aware of that at the moment, you say, I've got a hunch that's not right, and that's what I'm going to go through. And, let's just do the theme of elements that you can see and taste. Right. There's this dyslexic elements, which I love, which is tin, a spelling mistake, and arsenic. It's not wrong, but except it's gone through a few wobbly bits, as it's got there. Then there's elements that you can smell, and so bromine, stenchy element. But then you say, hang on, in my head, I do remember something really fussy there, and this is the whole thing of this thing to actually access it. And it was osmium. Osmium means odorous element, because the salts of osmium really stunk. And you go, those two. And then, of course, the poisoning elements of selenium, tellurium. Selenium gives you you smell like horseradishes. So there's that scent one. So as you go through there, the actual name is important. Osmium means it stinks, and bromine means it's stenching. But using the smell is, they've discovered tellurium, this smells differently, this must be a different element. So selenium, actually, the moon element, across it. So there's all these different layers, which comes sort of the strong concept and the weaker concept, and the actual concept class, like smell is there, but there's also the concept class of the actual what the element does to you in terms of brain. So, as I've mentioned before, hidden krypton is cryptic element from the crypt. It's very hard to get to. Lanthanum is another word, means hidden. So this is a concept there. Then you've got fluorine, the flow element, and barium, the heavy. I've got to bear fluorine for flow. These are very beautiful things to go. Then you've got the sort of dumbly named element. I'd have to say lithium is perhaps the dumbest name element. This is an element we found in a rock. What's your description of a rock? So like the least inspiring element. And then again, as you go in your head, you go, hang on, I've like lutetium, I definitely know because it was what I thought, and still perhaps do think is the most boring element there is, lutetium, but that's named after Paris. Then hafnium, H-A-F-N-Y-M, is actually named after after Copenhagen. Copenhagen, wonderful, wonderful Copenhagen. And I remember Danny Kaye and the different Hans Christian Andersen and stuff like that, Copenhagen. And of course I hate the Copenhagen School of what they have done to my beautiful quantum mechanics. And of course that it does two things. It gives people a false sense they could possibly understand it, but it's not understandable because it's woo magical. But it also makes people very aggressive. It's like this worst combination, whereas I find people who understand quantum physics or who generally understand quantum physics are very wave-functioning people. You know, things don't have to exist at one point in place and time. They believe it. So there's other places, the berkelium, in terms of obviously Berkeley's a place, strontium's a place, and then if we, sort of wave functionally, if we sort of soften the place names a bit, we've got beryllium. Now beryllium's got two things. Beryllium's hydrogen, lithium, beryllium, boron. Beryllium's the fourth element. So it should be fairly, beryllium is quite a common element. That's sort of light. Unfortunately, with these light elements, when stars want to make things, they sort of use up the light elements. But beryllium, from beryl, and beryl can mean light, but if you really dig away in it, it's got one aspect of blue, something like that, I can't pronounce it, but a place in India with a temple in it, and I sort of half want to actually take people on a global tour, and I sort of had a look about the how easy it was to jury-rig Google Maps, and I say it's actually quite hard to do, but I'll probably do a Google Earth world tour of the elements to take you to different places and see this various things. You can actually do something quite nice, so I might put that there. So beryllium is a sort of place. Then I'll come back to, well, I'll have to stick with beryllium. The other thing is that beryllium used to be G for not gluten, but something to do with tasting sweet. I've lost it. See, my memory's going. But it used to be G. Beryllium used to be G because beryllium salts tasted really sweet. Glycerine, they tasted really sweet. And so they named it G. If you imagine that in thank goodness that didn't get out. But then they moved it back to beryllium. But at one point it was G, and for its taste. And so there was there. Then you say, hang on, as you go down to the list, they're not measuring copper. Because what I think is that these snake oil people who come in and sell you the periodic table, but they always say, hey, look at me, aren't I nice? I can talk to you about the periodic table. They tend to stop at the very first layer of information. I think that's what I've been trying to do, is look past in layers of information, start to keep on extracting and extracting. So when someone gives me a document, I look at the metadata, I look at the structure, the fonts, the wording. I can actually pick word use across. You look deeper and deeper, and you start to build a story across. So copper comes from the Latin for copper. Okay, copper existed in Roman times, so obviously there'd be a Roman word for copper. But the actual word copper comes from the island of Cyprus. Get that? The copper mines used to be in Cyprus, and it means the ore from Cyprus. Cyprus. Is that not an amazing thing? So a lot of these ancient words, when the trail goes cold, they just say it's come from the last place. And it's sort of like this entire understanding to get across, and sort of to know the different stages, like the last stage of the periodic table. But in terms of my favorite periodic table story is that I decided, look, I'm going to have to start doing, obviously for a place name. So we get a place name is Moskvin. It's not after the oblast, which is a administrative area of the Soviet Union. Used to be oblast. They've broken up into oblast. So it wasn't after the city, but it's after the area of Moscow, Boscovin, wherever it is. It's down there. It's underneath. It's one of the elements out there, which is in the P block. So that's interesting to know. But I decided I'd start to, you're looking at elements which last less, they're, you make it and they last less than a second, up there. And then there's sort of a few elements that I thought, look, I better get to know them a little bit more, because I'm sort of like forward wrecking. I'm going to know that area. This curious thing, this is August, and someone's got their Christmas lights out. They just must like them. Good on you. Oh, Christmas in July. That's what we have in Australia. But it really is far too hot for anything like that. However, getting back to it, is that I thought I'd check out. I was aware that American, oh, it's the element in smoke detectors. I think there's the nuclear boy scout who's actually making an atomic bomb out of old smoke detectors, which is sort of like, go for it. So I thought I'd look after CM, which is curium, because Cu is taken by copper. And I'll look at this element, and this element is like the poster child of elements. Like, it's a synthetic element, transuranic. Anything after uranium is generally made minutely in nature by sort of accident, but if it's around the place, it's definite signs that man's here. And so this curium after Madame and Pierre, Marie and Pierre Curie. So it's rather good, because it's actually the one element named in honor of two people. That's quite a good hit. I sort of like that. And it was one of the elements made when they're making synthetic transuranic elements. So this is pretty amazing that Nagasaki got the benefit of our first transuranic element. It's got, I think, 6 kilograms of plutonium to make it, which is sort of stunning that they've made an element unknown to man or woman or people. But also they made americium, there you go, Americium and Curium. Now, the thing about Curium is that it is one of these sort of hot, when I say it's hot, it actually physically puts out 2 watts per gram, that is 2 joules per gram of it, and they can actually make substantial quantities of it. So in a ton of radioactive waste, I think you get a few grams of it. So you get a fair amount of stuff, and it's when in your nuclear waste you get a build-up of plutonium, and in your build-up of plutonium, plutonium undergoes a reaction and makes curium. And so this is a great element, or a great element. So you've got these about 5 different isotopes. Now, one's got a lifetime of 70,000 years. Another one has a lifetime, I don't know, I think it's 17,000 years. So look, it's there. Like if you gave me a kilogram of curium, firstly it would be putting out heaps of radiation, but it's something which I could live and die, and I could give it to my grandchildren, and you know, they wouldn't be able to tell, hey Dad, you've only given us 0.5 kilogram. No, hey Dad, you've given us 999.3 kilograms. Or it's be there, you can pass it on to your it's a bit of radioactive gift which goes on and on. So this curium is not what you'd expect. Americium, yes, but that sort of goes in the lifetime of a smoke detector, so perhaps 50 years. I don't know how long they have it there. It's a mad, mad world. But there's curium. There's different ways, there's different amounts. The one which is really hot is an isotope which burns out in a year or 20 years. You know, they've got different isotopes which they do. And being chemically different, it's ideal. Like if you make a isotope and it's chemically different, you can actually get it out. So this is the entire thing with Neptunium. It's the one between between uranium and plutonium. They can suck it out and then treat that differently and actually make the very light version of plutonium, which is the stuff they put in the thermoelectric energy sources they put in these space probes that they put out way out into deep space. Curium. It's not coming anywhere to any place useful. Like it's an excessively expensive one to make. It's sort of like a few million dollars, easily a few million dollars a kilogram of it, if they ever can get it. And you can imagine a whole lot of people, can't make people stirring out in a vacant local shopping centre. However, it does have a use. And it puts out a fair chunk of element defining x-rays. So if you put an x-ray fairly hard x-rays into something, what will happen is that you'll get secondary x-rays. I haven't really fully understood this, but the x-rays can go in and generate second fluorescence, x-ray fluorescence devices. And so basically, if you've got a power supply, you wouldn't want to use it. You know, you can plug something in and get your own x-ray machines, switch on, switch it on and off. The only place that you really want to do it is in space probes, which you send to other planets, and you get the other planets to get the little space probe to open a shutter, and outjuicing from this little probe is tons of x-rays, and it tells you the molecular composition. I suppose it would be if they put a lander on I've forgotten the name of that, the comet. There you go, my memory has gone. The is it the Curiosity rover? There's various rovers that they have a little bit of a curium in it. And the curium is the X-ray source. But that's not the most spectacular fact about curium. Given the nature of elements, given the fierce competition, the professionalism of especially the ones, the cooperation between the Americans and Russians to fill out the last table. And if I can say, the one thing at the table I find so nice is that the last element they've found, which is under radon, is Augustinian. And that's actually almost the exact name of the person who led the Soviet team. So I really like that. But as I promised, the curium's got the perhaps the best store. There's kiddies to, I think, I have to go through it, I may have to reread it. I think Neon was named by a kid. That's good. So I'll have to check that out. But this is more to it. Curium was a state secret. They had just spent so many, US has spent $2 billion making two lovely gifts for the Japanese, their two bombs. They had the Manhattan Project was their code name for their secret project. And nature of even plutonium and americium and curium were state secrets. And the person who discovered it was on US TV. I find this hard to believe. A children's program, perhaps a children's radio program, that's what I could only believe, is where you can imagine this American kid, I can't do an American accent, but with a little hat on, with a little fan on top, this American person who's playing with the space rocks. G'day, mate. Asked him, have you discovered any trans new elements? And to which he answered yes, and announced the world 5 days ahead of the official announcement on a children's TV program, a children's radio program, I would expect that yes, the world has discovered curium. And I sort of like that in terms of you can imagine that sort of thing happening today with the PR people and all that type of stuff. It sort of gives you a certain feel, and gives you a feel for the sort of the scary world. I might do a program about some of the early nuclear accidents, which are just chilling. But there's something sort of a bit homey, a bit, Life magazine, the 50s kitchen with the, did I have an A-line dress? I don't know. Those dresses with the little belts and the hairdo and the 50s appliances. Oh, mommy. Hey, mom. I don't know how the Americans speak. Hey, mom, I've just discovered this man on the radio told me about a new element. Oh, go on. That would be a curious thing. So there you go. That's a periodic table cleanup, which basically goes to show when you are actually in the process of learning things. I think I am learning the entire periodic table. What happens is the information gets ordered, and then run over as I'm going down a place called Emu Road. It's up the top of this hill, and I'm going down the hill, so I'll be able to do the next podcast without losing my breath. Thanks a lot for listening, I really hope that I can actually get through the periodic table ahead of time. I might do one on the periodic table of jokes, which I've built, this interactive periodic table. But what I'm going to try and do is see if I can get through and learn the periodic table, you know, be able to recite it all off, and then I might sit down and do a complete read of every, the history of every element of proper research to pick it up during this late stage. And this is very typical of your PhD. You write up your PhD, and when you're writing it up, you've got it all coming together, and these connections keep on going. So this is typical late stage stuff. And you know you're into late stage when you start saying, I can sort of see the atmosphere of this information, how this information is structured, what's going on, and why. You can sort of get a sense for where the information is going to be missing. And you turn up these pages and lo and behold, they miss all these things about elements involving children, which I think is neon. I have to check. Curium, fantastic. Or, I don't know, elements, misspelt elements. Elements which kill you, like cobalt, nickel. And fluorine actually has knocked off a few people. It's those aspects which you can get, but also to understand that you're not just researching just another thing. You are researching the periodic table, which is sort of like the Rosetta Stone of our modern technology. You could well imagine when we're all fried ourselves, all burnt ourselves to smithereens by people ignoring the warning signs. Eventually, there'll be evolve a eco-friendly species. This is not us, but people working out, how do they do this? How do they do that? And then eventually, they'll pull out a periodic table. It'll be all gibbledygook to them, and then someone will pick it out. And so, the periodic table is really a science cultural artifact. But the important thing about it is, as you're researching it, you realize that it's not dead, it's still alive, and there's these cultural reactions to it that are limiting the way that people say and research it. So I'm just another one of those cultural filaments burning through the space. Thanks for listening. Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.